Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah. You already know what time it is. It's that official time. When we take this worldwide. Let's go. Listen. So now it's time to turn it up. Surf the radio waves as we begin to burn it up. We all up in your area like landscape. Definitely bringing you the power slamming pancakes. It's the mandate that you tune in. It's time to move out so we can move in. And recognize that this is no illusion. I'm here to clear the air so that there is no confusion. It all started off in the book of Genesis, when Jacob was wrestling with who he thought was his nemesis. And when the man saw he couldn't overpower him, he touched his hip but he really couldn't have devoured him. And from that point then we hear a name change. Rearrange the game so now we gotta change. So I'm here to let you know it's time to listen to the Pancake and Power Slam Show. Let's go!
Now listening to the Pancakes and Power Slam Show by Crave Wrestling on Blog Talk Radio. Be sure to follow Crave Wrestling on Twitter at Crave Wrestling and join the Facebook fan page Crave Wrestling.
Episode 224, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Pancakes and Power Slam Show, and I am Chris Featherstone. And as always, we are live at 11 Culligan, funky like a monkey if you will. You know who that is. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the 224th episode. And as every week, we will have action-packed, informational, scholarly, instructional, advisory commentary on this show. And we're going to have some fun, as always. And ladies and gentlemen, we have an action-packed show, and I am very, very honored to introduce, ladies and gentlemen, former tag team champion, former million-dollar champion, and this guy is so popular that he is the CEO of his own posse. Without further ado, I'd like to introduce to you Ted DiBiase. Junior, how are you tonight, sir?
Man, I'm doing good, guys. How are you guys tonight? Appreciate you having me.
Doing great. It's great to have you as well. So how are you feeling today?
Well, first of all, I'd like to say I apologize for last week, because today I'm actually awake, as last week I fell asleep putting my son down. I don't travel as much these days, and so I'm kind of moved into dad mode, and I'm up all day, and I go to bed early now, and I'm not such the night owl I used to be when I was traveling the roads and trying to, keep Cody Rhodes and Sheamus in line. And so now it's my 4-year-old Tate who he's got all my attention and wears me out pretty good, pretty regularly every day, but it's the good stuff, So sorry about that, guys.
No worries.
Thanks for giving me the opportunity to jump back on this week.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Without a doubt. I understand because my oldest will be 4 in a little less than 2 months. So I totally understand the 4-year-old putting them to bed. I have a 1.5-year-old as well, and my wife and I are blessed that we typically we just put them up in their bedroom about 8 o'clock and put a movie or two on, and they're pretty good for the night. It gives my wife and I some time to spend with each other in the midst of the crazy days that usually happen. But, you know, every now and then my oldest son is starting to have some college hours. Today being a perfect example, up to about 15 minutes ago, he was still up, and I was down in my studio in my office just getting ready for the show, and all of a sudden I hear, "Daddy, Daddy," and he's like, "The movie's off," and I'm like, "Okay, should have been asleep about 3 hours ago, but we're rolling with this."
It's all good, man. Yeah, mine will show up here any minute now.
I totally get it. So it's great to have you on the show. So let's get into just asking you some questions and just kind of bringing people up to date on the goings on of Ted DiBiase Jr. But let's start off with just preliminary questions of you, your desire as a pro wrestler now. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to know that you come from generations of former professional wrestlers. Your dad's a Hall of Famer. So was there any other option other than you watching your dad? And I remember you having a tweet recently saying that your dad wasn't home a lot, but he was with you, you know, in spirit, basically. I'm paraphrasing what you were saying, but was that just basically what you've gained as far as your upbringing as a kid? Did your dad's travel and time in the WWE, did that inspire you to be a wrestler, or did you have other aspirations?
You know, I'd say yes to both. You know, my growing up, the son of the Million Dollar Man was definitely provided for an interesting childhood, to say the least. You know, and as a third generation wrestler, my grandfather, Iron Mike DiBiase, and my grandmother, Helen Hild, also being wrestlers, it certainly afforded me the opportunity of an insider's view to the business and understanding of what it takes and, you know, the sacrifice and the time away, where there are so many negatives, there's also the allure and the excitement, the addiction, I would say, to you know, being inside that ring, like in front of a crowd. You know, there is something about that is really hard to put into words. And once you experience, especially at such a level of that of WWE, it stays in you and it's a part of you. And so growing up, you know, running around the locker room with Hulk Hogan and Andre the Giant, Brutus the Barber Beefcake, Jake the Snake Roberts, you know, those guys, Bushwhackers and the Ultimate Warrior, that was my childhood. And, you know, seeing these larger-than-life superheroes, action heroes, you know, gargantuan, just beasts of men battle it out every night in front of these crowds, sold out, packed out, you know, just all over the place. Mm-hmm. I was infatuated for my father to be one of those guys. You know, it was obviously something inside me, a seed planted early on in my life that, you know, never went away. Even though I knew there were a lot of things missed out on really having a dad, so to speak. He missed all my birthdays and, you know, all the soccer games and football games. And I don't say that in a negative way. That was, it just is what it is. It was what it was, I guess. And it's what my dad knew, you know, we didn't have FaceTime. We didn't have, you know, the technology we have today to like really keep in touch. But he always did a great job of calling home. And, you know, I don't feel like I missed out on having a dad. It's the hindsight is 20/20, you know, looking back now, I realize for him, it must've been extremely hard. For me, it was all I ever knew. And now that I am a grown man and a father of my myself. And, you know, I do see some of the things my dad warned me about, you know, the travel, and I understand that, you know, what I believe now wholeheartedly that time is our greatest asset. It is our most valuable asset, and that which we can't predict. We don't know if we're going to have it, how much of it we got, you know, and we can't ever get it back. And so for me, stepping away from WWE was not an easy decision by any means. You know, it was a dream come true, but at the same time, me becoming a father was a bigger dream come true, and something that I won't let anything get in front of me, come between me and my son, or and even now me and my wife. You know, being a father and a husband is the greatest pride and joy I have in this life. And, you know, doing that and serving them, you know, in a godly manner, and just really being the example to my son and to my wife, and using the platform God's given me to now, you know, help those around me and do some really cool stuff is just become my new dream, you know. But kind of a long-winded answer, and went a couple different ways, but
it's okay.
That's where I'm at right now.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah, I get it. Yeah, it's funny because I was just about to say, you know, as a devoted Christian myself, you know, my greatest ministry is my family, my wife and my kids. And that is the, you know, that is the biggest example that I can have, you know, as a husband and as a father of two. You know, that's my biggest ministry. Everything else comes secondary from an earthly standpoint. So I totally get it. I agree with you 100%. What are some memorable feuds that you remember growing up as a kid?
Man, growing up as a kid, you know, I don't want to pretend like, you know, I'll be quite honest with you. A lot of people think that I just watched wrestling a lot all the time. It really was never watched unless my dad was actually wrestling, and it was mostly the big pay-per-views. But, you know, I do. I just kept up with him, really. I mean, I was watching, you know, Shawn Michaels and Bret. You know, those were two of my favorites other than my dad. But, you know, watching my dad and, you know, WrestleMania 4, that was pretty epic for me. You know, that
that's the tournament. Gosh, that
was the tournament.
The Savage one.
He ended up with Savage in the main event. You know, his first WrestleMania, wrestled three matches. And
have
to wrestle in the main event. And so that was probably one of the most memorable for me. But, you know, beyond that, wrestling wasn't really, when he came home, it wasn't something we talked about. You know, we didn't have the dungeon. It wasn't like, you know, the Bret Hart family.
More of a clocking out and you know, going
That's
on
right.
in his life as far as the thing. Yeah, I understand that. I've interviewed many people on the show, and they've, you know, there's a number of people I've interviewed on the show and talked to from a wrestling standpoint that, you know, they get immersed in the business, and a lot of wrestlers get that way. You know, they get immersed, and it's hard for them to keep families because they live and breathe and die wrestling. But, you know, there's some people who I watch Sting's documentary, and, you know, he was like that too, as far as just understanding the balance, you know, between the wrestling life and, you know, life outside of wrestling. I think that's definitely very important for someone to really obtain.
Absolutely. You know, it's, if, you know, some people could, I guess, take it one or two ways. You know, it's like, well, you weren't committed, or I would say I've just never been defined. Just never wanted to be like defined by wrestling or whatever I choose to do. You know, my work, doesn't define who I am. My character and my integrity defines who I am. Being defined as a saved by grace and a child of God, that's the only definition that I would like to leave, you know. So me finding, like, whatever it is I'm doing, you know, we're all given certain skill sets, certain talents and abilities, resources and relationships, and what we do with those are, you know, those are decisions we make, but how we use those and how others are affected by how we use those talents and gifts, resources and relationships is really a good indicator of the legacy that we'll leave. You know, so if we use those specifically just for ourselves, and which we're playing, you know, you're really focused on yourself 24/7. How can I get my body bigger? How can I change my character? How can I climb that ladder? I need to create this storyline and pitch this to this person. And you're constantly thinking about yourself. And that's one thing I realized along the way. It's really hard for me because it's hard not to become prideful or egotistical, you know, and it's hard not to get wrapped up in that world. And then you start making a bunch of money and people wanting your autograph, and, you know, then it's the world will continue to let you down. And, you know, as you seek it and you want more of it, it's never satisfying. You know, and then you quickly forget, you just get wrapped up in this facade of reality that is not reality, you know, and it's not real life. And the things that really do matter, you know, just become pushed to the side or secondary and not priorities anymore. Relationship with God being one that happened to me, and then family, you know, because you're so focused on yourself. So, you know, I started thinking about that, and it's like, you know, how can I stop building my kingdom and focus on, number one, for me personally, it's Lord, how can I build your kingdom with what you've given me? And yeah. So, you know, that's become my focus post wrestling, and that's why I turned down, you know, a contract renewal, you know, and left financial security and stepped out on faith. It was because I won't jeopardize that, you know, and it's not, I'm not like bashing wrestling. That can be anything, you know, it had just become something that, I personally couldn't find that balance, like you said, you know, and it was starting to kind of own me and take all of my attention and time and destroy me, not just physically or, you know, mentally, but even more so spiritually. And for me, that matters most, you know, because if that goes, my ability to be a father and a leader in my household and community, that diminishes. And that's something I can't and I will not sacrifice, you know, or compromise.
Absolutely. When that goes, you know, you become defined by what you do, and what you do, you know, is fleeting. You know, you do something now,
that's
you
right.
do something 5 years from now, you do something 12 years from now. Those are all, you know,
yeah.
everything that you do is going to be the past, you know, eventually. So, you know,
that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I told somebody that the other day, you know, they were, I was speaking to some kids, and I said, look, you know, my dream was to wrestle in WrestleMania. And WrestleMania 26, I walked out in front of 74,000 people in Scottsdale, Arizona, and I don't know how many million watching around the world. And I was out there for about 10 minutes. You know, our match lasted that long because it got cut like three times. And I remember getting in back into the locker room, and I was like, wow, is that it? You know, and it was like, what do I do now? You know, what's next? I mean, I just did it. And I had focused and worked so long to get to this point and really had not thought beyond that, you know, because, and what I remember most and what I love most about the story of my life up until that point was the kid who had left college and was the only one in his family to graduate college and then left it and graduated and left like a day after he graduated, which was half a semester early, didn't stay to walk. And then I went for an entire year, worked four jobs while I was chasing a dream, you know, mm-hmm. that a lot of people thought would be very easy for me or handed to me on a silver platter. And it wasn't, you know, it was actually a lot harder because expectations were higher. My father's a Hall of Famer, so I was constantly, you know, dealing with the comparisons of, you know, the successes of my dad, who had 23 years in the business and, you know, only the last five or six with WWF, you know, and in his career. And so anyway, thinking about that day, like, up until that day that I wrestled in WrestleMania, it was like, man, I found out a lot about myself along the way. You know, John Maxwell says, the dream is free, but the journey is not. Mm-hmm. And I've come to really value and love the journey, because that's where you find out about, that's where the real stuff happens. You know, when you can learn to live your life on a mission instead of just live your life for success or, like you said, you know, end results, then you can do that rain, snow, sleet, or shine, and there's never an ending. You know, it's how we do the things that we do defines, you know, what we become and, you know, what story we leave behind for our children to tell.
Absolutely. So. Yeah, absolutely. I'm, you know, other than writing for Fox Sports and Sports Illustrated, I'm actually a PhD student right now. And,
nice.
Yeah, lots of work. but yeah, my goal is this, and people, you know, I say it jokingly, but people know I'm serious. You know, I want to live a legacy where my goal is to be an answer to a Jeopardy question. That's what I want to do. I'm serious about that.
That's cool.
Legendary bucket list. That's like the ultimate bucket list.
That's awesome.
To be a Jeopardy question. I want someone to say, who is Chris Featherstone? And I want to do it while I'm living. That's the goal, to do it while I'm living. And,
that's awesome.
You know, while I'm, and instead of, if I'm dead, I won't know. I won't hear someone say that. So no one can relay the message either. So that's my goal. So you mentioned real quick, you mentioned about just the level of pressure that came with being inserted into the WWE. When you came to the main roster, you kind of was placed in a pretty good position, being a heel and kind of goading Cody Rhodes to join you in the dark side, so to speak, and turn on Hardcore Holly, and you became a tag team champion. Your first match in the main roster, so
that was
a big deal. So, how did that go about, and who made that decision, and you know, kind of relive that with us as far as the talks behind that.
Yeah, that was it all happened like so quickly, like came out of nowhere. I remember I was doing some, they had brought me up and I was doing some house shows and I was wrestling Hacksaw Jim Duggan,
mm-hmm.
which was awesome. And, tons of fun. It was so easy. Just chant USA, you know? And so I was doing that. And then all of a sudden, May 26, 2008, my dad calls me and says, hey, I just got a call. I'm going to be at Raw Monday. I was like, or tomorrow. I was like, okay. He said, I wonder if you're debuting. And I was, nobody had said anything to me. So I was kind of nervous. And then he got there. He's like, yep, you're debuting. I'm going to introduce you. And you got to cut a promo. I was like, crap. I got to cut a promo and I got to follow you. You know, great. So sold out crowd in Denver. Then I think it was 4 weeks after that, we had led up to Night of Champions, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
It was a pay-per-view. And, man, I honestly, I didn't I didn't know. I didn't know the politics. You know, I didn't know. It was just kind of like up in the air, and they told me the day of, and each week was, I think we had some backstage promos or something. I don't remember. I'm horrible. I don't remember anything. Cody remembers everything. He's got like a vault for a memory. And he just knows wrestling. He's like a walking encyclopedia. But I remember that them kind of going through it. And I was, that when they first told me that day, I was like, oh man, Bob Holly's going to kill me. And he did, man. He was such a, he was really a class act about it. And, very supportive. You know, I went out of my way to just really be as respectful as I could and really earn respect from guys that have been there. I've always enjoyed being a student of anything. And, you know, I hated the fact that people would sometimes assume because of my name, you know, that I might be entitled, you know, or they may assume that I would or think that I would act that way. But so I would go above and beyond to make sure that I didn't come off entitled, if that makes sense. And, you know, I was super humbled with the opportunity and just grateful that, you know, I can't help that my dad was a $1 million man and DiBiase, you know, was a third generation wrestler. And I know it makes for a good storyline and those things, but then I had to live up to the hype or the, you know, the pressure of that. And so, yeah, I did carry that, but at the same time, my dad, he never put any added pressure and really diffused a lot of that. And then, you know, my relationship with the Lord really helped me to, I wasn't living for the world. You know, I would go in cycles really while I was in wrestling, and that was what was so hard for me and why I really needed to get out, because, man, I had some struggles. I had some really high ups and downs, and, you know, but anyway, that was the beginning of a great run. I mean, we had a great tag team, Cody and I did, you know, and then that kind of propelled us into Legacy, which was probably the best part of my career. And working with Randy was awesome. He's crazy, but I love him. And that was a lot of fun, man. That was a couple of years, and that was good times working with DX and, you know, working with Cena a lot, and just a lot of, a lot of fun times. I'd go and do that over again any day.
Yeah, it seemed as if there was a lot of steam that came with the Legacy angle. Now, two things real quick. There was Sim Snuka and Alpha Jr. that was also a member of Legacy. My first question is, who came, you know, what was the idea? Why were they kicked out? And then, my second question is, who came up with the idea to split up the Legacy?
Well, I think once we started it, you know, I came back from filming Marine 2, and that's when I think they did away with Afa and Snuka. I think they just saw the look that Randy and myself and Cody had together, and they wanted to go with that. That was, you know, really the that's a Vince call. You know, I don't really know any other reason. And we worked really well together, and I think because we all had just a similar look. You know, kind of just that, I don't know. I mean, you look at a picture of us, we all three look pretty pretty identical, minus Randy Orton's like gigantic quads, you know.
Yeah.
he's a little bit taller, so it was just a good look, you know. And mm-hmm. we had good chemistry, worked well together. We could do triple threats, and it was easier to book. So, and I guess Randy may have just wanted it that way, you know. So, mm-hmm. But then to break it up, you know, that was they wanted Randy. They wanted to make Randy a babyface, and that was where things could have probably gone different for me if they would have kind of capitalized on, you know, I had a little momentum there. Some people, you know, the crowd was kind of wanting me to turn face a little bit.
Yeah. Yep.
Me and Randy and I did a match. We had a couple matches, but one where I let him basically just beat me up, you know, and mm-hmm. I shoved him back once and it exploded. And that was probably one of the coolest matches. And, but I remember I didn't fight back at all, you know, and then I just shoved him once and then, let him walk around and do his creepy faces and he RKO'd me. But after that, I thought for sure we were going to have a match at Mania, just the singles. And, they were like, that wouldn't be fair. And I think there were some politics there. And then, you know, it would have been weird just me and him having a match and not Cody. And so they're like, well, we'll make Randy face and break Legacy up. I don't know who made that call. I didn't really agree with it. I wish they'd have kept it a little bit longer.
Yeah.
Even just me and Cody tagging for a little bit longer, because then they had no idea what to do with me. So they were like, here's the belt the next night. And then I think I lost to Christian and there was absolutely no storyline and nothing
right.
to, like, there was no moment. I mean, all that build up and the implosion, and me and Cody could have feuded, or, you know, I don't know. There could have been a lot better, but they were just worried about Randy. So it is what it is.
Yeah. And then, yeah, they did shuffle you around. I mean, you had the $1 million title. You were feuding with the Gold Dust, and you had Maurice. And then you did have a pretty solid babyface run with the old DiBiase posse. But, you know, it just seemed like you really never got your ground. As far as from the creative standpoint, although the crowd was behind you, you know, with the old DiBiase posse thing going on, and, you know, they still didn't manage to use that to leverage, you know, for you
yeah.
and your benefit. And, you know, you explained, you know, why you departed. Let's talk for the next couple minutes about Cody Rhodes' departure. Now, do you still keep
sure.
in contact with Cody?
I do. Here and there. I mean, you know, I think he still has some things left to do in the wrestling business, and
mm-hmm.
man, he's just a genius. Like, got an incredible you know, creative mind for the business, and you know, he loves it. Like, he has more passion for this industry than anybody I know, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He constantly, still to this day, watches old tapes and you know, the good stuff. He knows everyone, and you know, I think he wanted it so bad, and he would go above and beyond. He would pitch more ideas, and I mean, they would be home runs, and he would just keep pitching, and they'd turn him down, and he'd keep pitching. And, you know, it's hard to watch, you know, somebody that's what's hard about this industry is, like, even if you're capable, even if you go above and beyond, it doesn't matter. It's not like something like a sales position where, you know, you're working commission, and the more you sell, the more money you make, you know. In this industry, it's not like that, because you can put in the most time, you can put in the most pitches, you can you be the biggest guy, you can have the best mic skills, you can, but if it doesn't all add up on the right day at the right time in front of the right person, it will not happen, you know. So the stars have to literally align perfectly, and you got to make sure you don't piss off the wrong person on the wrong day, or it could ruin your career forever, you know.
Yeah.
It's crazy how just some of the, there's just nuts how some things have happened to people that, you know, got them on this track that they couldn't get off, that they didn't deserve to be on, you know. And I don't know. Cody's going to be fine. He's a hard worker. One of the hardest workers I know, got incredible work ethic, and he'll probably do extremely well independent wise if he wants to do that. And then whatever he wants to do, he's super intelligent, super smart guy. I'll be just fine.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, it's great to have you, Teddy. I really appreciate it. I was just soaking it all in, all the insight that you had, that you have. Let people know about your current endeavors.
Yeah, man. Well, we've got a great camp coming up, HOD.world, if you want to see some of the stuff, that my main stuff we're doing. I work with my dad a lot on it's Heart of David Ministries, but we've got a camp next, it's July 21st to the 24th. It's for boys ages 13 through 19. We're giving away scholarships to come to camp. We'll have NFL guys, MLB, WWE is actually going to have a film crew there doing a Where Are They Now story on me. And so
nice.
We're doing a nice little surprise wrestling show that night. I may have to put the boots on, just saying.
Dust them off.
But we bring inner city kids from Jackson, and you know, we've got a lot of kids coming from foster care, and then we got some stud baseball players and football players, soccer, basketball that'll be out there. So that, and you know, there's some other things that you'll probably see soon that, you know, working on right now. I've got a startup company called GiveChat, and a couple of our documentaries coming out, The Price of Fame, you can check it out. Finally have you know, put a stamp on it, and so that should be in the next month or two, I'm really hoping. And if not, we're going to just shop it around the film festivals at the beginning of next year. So those are the things right now. And, man, I can't thank you enough for having me on. And, again, apologize for last week falling asleep on your brother.
Oh, no problem, man. I get it. You have an awesome agent. Bobby's a great guy. And, you know, he was just making sure that he just kept the integrity. I guess there is a pun intended there. Of you and him, and you know, I just you know, when you tweeted about it early in the day and tagged me, you know, I knew that, you know, you were ready and excited about it, and just as I were, and so I figured it was that, you know. So you know, it's funny, you know, we've been discussing for a while now, and you know, there's a running theme of we both being men of faith, and so there's one F word, and it's not a cuss word, and it stands for it's forgive. So no worries.
Amen.
Here.
Thank you, brother. I appreciate
awesome.
It, bud.
I appreciate you, Teddy, and you have a great night. Appreciate you.
All right, man. You too.
All
God
right,
bless.
Bye. You too. Bye. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for the Teddy DiBiase Jr. interview. Great stuff. Awesome insight. I really, really appreciate him being on the show, just soaking in all of the inspiration and insight that he had from his journey in the WWE. Ladies and gentlemen, let's talk some wrestling and some headlines. Without further ado, I'm going to bring on to the show the webmaster extraordinaire of WrestleView.com, Adam Martin, how are you tonight, sir?
I'm good. How are you doing, sir?
I am doing fantastic. How's the night going?
It's pretty good. Very warm night tonight, but it's just relaxing a little bit. And it was good to hear from Ted DiBiase. It's kind of crazy to think that he's been gone from that company for, he's going on 3 years now, almost in August, I think. So good to hear from him.
Yeah, it is. It's I you know, it's funny, man. I'm really specific and targeted. I'm really particular as far as who I want on the show. And, you know, it's just, I do a lot of research, as I'm writing, as I'm sure you do as well. And it's like, man, who do I want to talk to? Who do I want to know, you know, the goings on and their experience in WWE? That's why one of my themes on the show was to interview ex-WWE stars, because, you know, I've had the opportunity to interview WWE stars, and I really don't, you know, get too much from it, because, you know, there's kind of a gag order, you know, that they have to uphold to, but, you know, it's more of a tell-all when it comes to people who have had that experience, who doesn't have to, you know, be restricted to, you know, say, you know, not say certain things about the industry. So I love, those are the people I love interviewing. And I wanted to see what's going on with Teddy. He really got the short end of the stick. So it was really good to hear from him. And I totally agree with you.
I always remember, too, there was this comment, and I can't remember when he said it, but there was a comment that John Cena made, where he was asked to make predictions about the WWE, and he said that he was going to main event WrestleMania one day with Ted DiBiase Jr. And I remember reading that going like, wow, I would hate to be Ted DiBiase Jr. because it's almost like they set up really high expectations for him. And it's not that he didn't hit those expectations. It's just that when the bar is set so incredibly high with these second generation, third generation guys, that it's just, it's a tremendous amount of pressure. They did it with Drew Galloway when he was Drew McIntyre. You know, even to a degree with Cody Rhodes. I mean, a lot of these second generation, third generation, it's just like, just let them kind of figure it out. And I feel like maybe they're going to cool down on that a little bit with some of these guys and girls that are coming in, because there's still a pretty fresh crop of some others that are coming in too. But I don't know. There just seems to be really, really high standards, and it's unfortunate that most of the time it doesn't work out, and that's kind of how it goes.
I totally agree with that. I think that's a great point as far as just the pressure that they put on those second and third generation stars. All right, ladies and gentlemen, let's get to the headlines.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is time for the headlines.
Brock Lesnar versus Randy Orton, official for SummerSlam. Adam, thumbs up or thumbs down?
I kind of like it. I mean, it's funny too, because if you think about the path that these guys took, they were both in OVW together, which a lot of people didn't see. And for the most part, there's maybe just photos that circulated if you were a big magazine, wrestling magazine fan back in the day when they would actually profile OVW. That's kind of how I got to see OVW stuff, was photos and recaps and profiles of people that were there. But there was that interesting correlation of when Brock became WWE champion in 2002 and left the company in 2004. And there was that moniker that Brock was the youngest champion in the company's history. And as soon as he left to go pursue a career in the NFL, which then eventually led to a career in mixed martial arts, there was that moniker that he kind of kept with him, that he was the youngest champion. And then quickly they kind of and I don't know if that was the only reason they went with Randy, but it kind of felt like it, especially when you saw what played out with him beating Chris Benoit at SummerSlam a couple years later and becoming the youngest champion. And then that didn't last too long. But I like that they could play off some of that history stuff. I like Brock as a special attraction. I will say this though, and I heard this comment made on the Opie radio show with Opie and Jimmy on Sirius XM. They were talking about Brock's return at the UFC, which I know we were going to talk about in a little bit, but they were saying, I think it was mainly Opie that was kind of making the comments like, you know, how does Brock go from such a successful return to the UFC to then, you know, jumping back into the WWE again? And that was, he was, and this is where you get into that interesting scenario of like, you know, some people just don't care. Wrestling fans don't care about stuff like that, but people that are outsiders looking in that don't follow wrestling, they got to see a promo for SummerSlam between Lesnar and Orton during the UFC pay-per-view on Saturday.
Yep.
So sure maybe did. They weren't aware of it, and then all of a sudden they are. And then there's almost kind of this like brand confusion where it's like there's going to be, and I don't mean to say this harshly, but I think even you would agree with this, you know, most wrestling fans aren't the smartest people, and they're going to, you know, there's going to be a little confusion there of what's, you know, there's definite, I hear it all the time when people ask what I do and they get it confused with mixed martial arts. Mm-hmm. And you're really blurring the lines there. So it's going to be a little weird. And I will watch and, of course, you know, cover it for WrestleView, and I'm looking forward to it. But it is going to be weird to see Lesnar going from such a real fight scenario, a sports competition, athletic scenario, to, you know, beating up Randy Orton or Randy Orton even staying with him is just silly almost. So it's going to be a little weird, but I'm going to go with it and see what they do, but it's going to be a little silly to watch, I think.
Yeah. I think it's an attraction because they've never had a feud, you know, in the 14 years, of course, on and off for Brock, more half of that for Brock as far as his tenure. But, you know, the 14 years that they started, they both were in the class of 2002, and, you know, they're 14 years later. They, you know, Brock and Randy never had a very long-going feud, or really even a really feud at all. They just kind of were separate brands, and that's how Brock Lesnar and Triple H was until Brock came back. They kind of were on separate brands. And so I do think that there's material there as far as, you know, the Michael Cole especially is one to butcher history and, you know, say that this is a first ever and things like that, which is clearly not true. But, you know, there's some legitimacy that he could have as far as saying first evers with this. And that kind of raises some type of interest. But, you know, I've said this on my show before. I'm just not sold on Randy Orton, and I haven't been for a few years now. He's just been kind of bland and boring to me. Maybe this is a refresher because he's been out, I think, for about 9 months now. So, you know, this could help. But, you know, after this, I mean, I wrote on Fox Sports last week that I would like to see him and Baron Corbin go against each other. I think that would be very good. There's some advertisements of him and AJ Styles doing some house shows, so there may be a few that's kind of sparks up. But even with any of those, you know, I think Randy Orton's at the spot now where I think he should just put people over for his namesake. I don't see much left in Orton. I think this is really kind of the end as far as like a big thing, a big feel for Orton. Otherwise, I just think, you know, his name should be strong enough to just put people over now, and I think Corbin would be perfect.
And Orton had that kind of that brief moment there in 2014 where the crowd was kind of organically getting behind him when he was associated with the Authority, and it felt like something was kind of happening with him. Like there was a genuine movement of the fans really kind of like, you know, okay, we're gonna go with Randy, like we're really gonna support this guy. And then he got injured. And that was it. And it didn't work out. And he's been out for a long time. And he's a guy that's battled a lot of injuries, and it's just a lot of wear and tear. And that's unfortunate, especially with a guy at the level he's at right now. But it does feel fresh. I agree with you on that. But yeah, I mean, beyond this, you know, Randy's does he become, is he back on the road full time? Is he a part of the Raw brand? Is he a part of the SmackDown brand? There's a lot of stuff that we have to see what plays out, but I think, and maybe that'll be determined well before SummerSlam, because we're already talking about, you know, this match, and this match is taking place in August, and we still have a, you know, the draft and another pay-per-view to go before then. So I am looking forward to it, but it is, we'll have to see where they go. And even Brock too, we don't even know where he's going even after SummerSlam.
Yeah. Speaking of that, there was a press conference after the fight between him and Mark Hunt, where he said that, I quoted it. I made a quote and put it on the Crave Wrestling Facebook page. I don't remember verbatim now, but he was saying it as far as when the dust settles, I'm not quite sure what I'm going to do. I think that was close enough to the quote that he said. And so, you know, I was telling my friends who I was watching UFC with, if he loses against Mark Hunt, I think this would have been a one-off. You know, he would have got the itch would have been scratched, so to speak, and he would have got the jitters out, and he would have got it all out and out of the system. But I think now, especially with the purse, you know, I heard on ESPN, and there's a couple other sites that reported $2.5 million. You know, that compared to him winning, compared to Dana White most likely wanting him to have another match. You know, I just kind of wonder, because he's still in contract. I believe it was a 3-year contract that he signed and decided to stay with the WWE. Does he, you know, do they negotiate again, you know, for him to have another fight? So it's really interesting. I mean, he defeated Mark Hunt. I thought the fight was pretty good, actually. Mark Hunt, you know, for him to be, you know, 265, 66 pounds, 42 years old, only 5'10", you know, a few inches shorter than Brock. I think it was about a 6 or 7 inch reach that was less than Brock, maybe about five inches or so. But the reach was significant, and he hung with Brock. I thought it was pretty good. I mean, Brock had a couple takedowns that were meaningful, but one of the takedowns, Mark Hunt just got right back up, and he was pretty agile for being a big guy. And you know, when he mounted Mark Hunt, you know, Mark Hunt was getting some pretty good shots in there, and I would say probably the second round is when Mark Hunt was kind of teasing. You know, he was kind of startling Brock, and there was a couple times where Brock was startled. So I thought it was a good. I thought it was a good match. I thought it was a good debut, re-debut for Brock after nearly 5 years. And you know, I was pretty impressed by the fight. You know, there's people like you know, Muir, you know, Frank Muir, Josh Barnett, Cain Velasquez, who won earlier in the night. That are probably looking at Brock and wanting to compete against him to get that purse as well, or similar to it. So it should be pretty interesting. What are your thoughts on the fight?
I was really interested in the fight because, you know, he had a 5-year layoff, and I was, I'm a big, big mixed martial arts fan. And that's kind of that, I have to kind of blur that line sometimes, because there's a lot of people that I'm friends with that are into wrestling, but they're not so much into mixed martial arts. And I remember that first year that Brock debuted, that, you know, there was a lot of people maybe watching mixed martial arts for the first time. They had maybe never watched an actual fight. And it was kind of annoying. I remember too, at the time, being such a big fan and listening to wrestling fans and just hearing the lack of education. I mean, not that you have to be the scholar when it comes to the sport of mixed martial arts, but I could tell within, you know, 10 seconds when someone was talking about Brock's debut that they just had no idea what they were talking about. Mm-hmm. And even the dynamics going into his first fight, and at least, I mean, he did have the warm-up fight prior to his UFC debut. But to see, you know, how he developed at that time, and becoming the heavyweight champion, yes, did he get, I mean, he absolutely got advantages over other fighters that, you know, other people were not going to get because of his name value coming from the WWE. But he really found a way to kind of distance himself from professional wrestling when he became champion, and had tremendous success, and really became, he became a mixed martial arts fighter. He was no longer the pro wrestler trying out MMA, which is what CM Punk is going to attempt to do in a few months here in August. But to see him come back into this sport, I know he put a lot of blame on diverticulitis, which, you know, I understand people have to kind of set a narrative, and it's a good story, and not to take anything away from what he experienced with that disease, but he also was going up against, you know, some pretty tough guys with, you know, Cain Velasquez and Alistair Overeem, and it wasn't, you know, totally the disease. It was just, you know, a difference in experience and you know, fight style, and that was the real intriguing thing about him coming back was, you know, they didn't give him some random dude. I mean, Mark Hunt was the number 8 ranked heavyweight in the UFC going into this fight, so it wasn't a cakewalk for Brock, and Hunt was just destroying and taking people out. And you were talking about the height difference. I mean, that doesn't matter at all for Mark Hunt. I mean, Mark Hunt's like, what, 5'10", 5'11", and he drops Stefan Struve, who's like the tallest heavyweight maybe possibly competing in the sport right now. So yeah. That's what people were watching. Unfortunately, I think a lot of people knew what – I mean, and that's the weird thing about this sport, and people were also complaining about the Daniel Cormier-Anderson Silva fight later that night, it took place earlier, was – you know, a wrestler versus a striker. And this is exactly what Brock Lesnar and Mark Hunt was. I mean, Mark Hunt has very good takedown defense, but he was going to try to drop Brock, and Brock's biggest weakness during his time in mixed martial arts was, could he take a punch and he would shut down. I think he took some pretty good shots. He didn't, going back and I had watched the fight a second time, he didn't take any full-on big bombs from Mark Hunt, but there was a couple that grazed him and he held up. And I know you were talking about the press conference after the show, where he had a big swollen left eye, and he seemed pretty confident about, he said, I think I answered the question of whether or not I could take a big shot. And I don't know if we truly did get the answer to that question or not, but right. he did at one point really try to stand and trade with Mark Hunt, which is a dangerous, dangerous thing to be doing. And he was kind of, you know, he would throw in some jabs, but he was almost like palming the face of Mark Hunt versus, you know, punching. So you could tell he was creating distance and trying to go for that takedown. But when that, I mean, the guy's a gorilla, man. I mean, he is just, when he gets you down, and he has just such tremendous wrestling experience from his time in the NCAA. And he's just so strong. And that's one thing Mark Hunt talked about, is just how strong Brock was. And I know Mark said he's interested in having a rematch with Brock, but I don't know where they go. But as of now, as we're having this conversation, Brock is now the number 8 ranked heavyweight in the UFC after one fight. So I would have to think he's eyeballing that Madison Square Garden debut later this year. And I believe it's in November. Mm-hmm. A lot of people want to get on that card, obviously, because of the, not only because it's in a big market like New York City, but the significance of the fact that mixed martial arts had up until this point been banned in the state of New York, which is so silly. You know, you got to think Brock's eyeing that card, and there's a possibility. And he did say in that post-fight press conference, they asked him, they said, you know, so what happens now? Does UFC have to go back to the table and negotiate with Vince and Triple H? And he said, well, you know, let's make something very clear. Brock Lesnar does what Brock Lesnar wants to do. Mm-hmm. And this to me is the most interesting aspect of this, Chris, is does Vince budge again? I mean, Vince got a little return on his investment of having Brock go do this fight, promoting a video game, promoting SummerSlam. But do you let that happen again and let Brock become this kind of almost this, I think at one point he compared himself to Bo Jackson of just doing multiple things. And I wouldn't really call professional wrestling a sport because it's not a sport, but it's an athletic, you know, form of entertainment. And you know, exactly. So it's going to be interesting. And he sure, with the smile on his face, he sure seemed like he wanted to have another fight, but we're going to have to see what happens.
Yeah. I certainly don't think this is it for Brock Lesnar. Like I said, if he lost, I think it would have been a different thing, but he won, and he won unanimously, 29-27, you know, from all judges. So, you know, I don't think this is it. I think, like I said, I think the purse was intriguing enough for another one. And like you said, he's in the top 10 now after being gone for almost 5 years. So, you know, there's people around him that would like to compete against him to, you know, to try to jockey for that the number one spot. And so it should be interesting. I think, you know, someone like Amir would be good again, because I would like for him to go against a more of a submission expert. Hunt is a striker. He is a striker. I mean, he's known for being a striker. But it would be interesting, you know, to go against someone who was more of a submission expert. So back to the WWE. So Eric Bischoff, and I'm going to ask you during the Raw review, who are your predictions for the Raw and SmackDown general manager? But as far as Eric Bischoff is concerned, he shot down rumors of a WWE return, and then a little bit after that, he kind of teased it. So, do you think that we will see Eric Bischoff back in the WWE at all?
I don't think so, but I could be completely wrong. He seems like, especially after, I don't know if you got a chance to see the new documentary they just put out with Bischoff a few weeks ago, but he seems like a guy that's very at peace at what he has accomplished in wrestling. Mm-hmm. And he's got a whole bunch of projects. He's got the Buffalo Cody, I think that's what it's called, beer. I'm probably butchering the name, but it's something like that, out in Wyoming. He has his own production company where he has a series of television shows in production with Jason Hervey. And he strikes me as a guy who is just kind of, he's ready to move on, I think. And the last real stint we saw from him was his involvement with TNA, and that didn't end very well.
No.
So, but it's always possible. Maybe he wants to be involved. He hasn't been an on-air character with the WWE since, 2005, 2006?
Mm-hmm.
So
yep.
It's been a long time. Obviously, some people are maybe rediscovering Eric through the WWE Network, and, you know, you can watch every episode of Nitro now on that thing, and of course, the new documentary they just put out, which I thought it got, you know, there's a lot of people that have kind of always had it out for Eric Bischoff, especially the Wrestling Observer crowd. And I do respect a lot of the work that, you know, Dave Meltzer and Brian Alvarez do, but those guys, man, they're just determined to not, Dave Meltzer was notorious for just, you know, questioning the hire of Eric Bischoff back in the day. And they had somebody do a review of that documentary, just absolutely destroying it. I was just, there was a lot of interesting aspects to that documentary and stuff that I didn't even really know about, especially from the business side of profit margins and where the money went with revenue with WCW in relation to Ted Turner before the AOL Time Warner buyout. So, but getting back to what the question, I don't think so. But anything is possible, but he seems like a guy that's ready to wrap it up. And, you know, he seems more, you know, intrigued with politics. If you follow him on Twitter, he's talking all day about politics, and obviously he leans a certain way. It seems to be a very right-wing kind of conservative guy, and doesn't shy away from sharing that opinion on Twitter. But he seems like he's more interested in you know, politics and his production stuff than maybe getting back into wrestling. But anything's possible.
Yeah, and I was pretty firm about that. Exactly what you're saying, but I just. You know, Eric Bischoff, like kind of like you said, he always came across to me as far as someone who is kind of, you know, happy about where he is. And, you know, he hasn't really been an on-air character. And even with TNA, you know, that was around 2010, you know, the whole Immortal thing going into 2011. And so it's been at least, you know, even with that, it was about 5 years ago. So. You know, and I think, like you said, with all the other endeavors that he's doing, you know, he's pretty good, and he's getting up there in age as well. Basically is up there in age. And so, you know, but the interesting thing is I still wonder why he would even take the time to kind of recant what he said before, as far as, you know, the tweet that he said is, you know, there's not a chance, and then kind of recanting it and saying anything's possible. I just wonder if it was just kind of trolling, or if it was just something like, you know, you never know. He's not totally just kind of exonerating himself from even considering being a part of it. So quite interesting to me. Jeff Hardy and Rey Mysterio not approached for return. And I broke the news as far as JTG, because I keep in contact with JTG. I also texted Carlito, and it's funny because I texted Carlito many times, and we've texted back and forth, and he responds to, you know, all of my – he responded to all of my texts before, but I texted him about a return, and I haven't heard back from him. So it's quite interesting that I didn't hear back from him this time as opposed to all the other ones, but – JTG, you know, we talk or we contact each other frequently, relatively frequently, and he just kind of was straight up as far as like, nah, no one's contacting me. And so there's reports of Rey Mysterio and Jeff Hardy also not being contacted. So where are these rumors coming from?
A lot of time it's people just flat out making stuff up. And the one thing I've noticed, I've been covering wrestling on the internet roughly since about 1999. And with the advent of Twitter and Facebook, stuff takes off a lot faster than it used to. Before, a story would kind of travel on, you know, websites and message boards, but that was about it though. Like you had to be really dialed in. And now a report, you know, somebody could possibly hint at something or say something. It now becomes a trending topic on Facebook, or it becomes a trending topic on Twitter, and it just kind of travels and travels. And now you have a conglomerate of about 20 to 25 wrestling sites with the same three or four people running it strictly to serve a purpose of having the highest SEO ranking on Google when you type in a keyword. Right. So yeah. I think because of this, and you know this with the stuff that you write for Sports Illustrated, that stuff just travels really fast now. So many people have a podcast now, so it travels through that. But that's kind of where this stuff starts, is someone might say something, and then it travels, and then 20, 25 sites pick it up, and then you just have this endless loop of these strange wrestling domain websites with just like terrible names but at the same time though, if you're a wrestling fan and if you're reading stuff like that, you gotta consider the source too. I mean, you can't take these things to the bank. And if there's a lot of these goofy sites reporting it, but some of the bigger sites with more legitimate, I know the word legitimate and Internet Wrestling Reporter probably don't go together. But you got to consider the source on a lot of these stories, and a lot of them get quickly shot down. So I think people just get really excited, and they think, oh, you know, this could happen. But anybody that was paying attention knows that, well, first of all, Rey Mysterio's knees are completely shot, and mm-hmm. he has an agreement in place with Lucha Underground right now. Mm-hmm. And Jeff Hardy, for some strange reason, I don't know if there was an opportunity there may have been, but decided to re-sign with TNA. Now, mm-hmm. I know the TNA deals are a little looser than some other ones, but he's pretty much locked up. So, you know, there's always – I know at one point there was some strong hinting and discussions of maybe the Hardy Boys get one last run in the WWE with the Dudley Boys coming back, and maybe there's going to be a possibility of a door opening there, especially with Triple H doing a lot of the negotiations lately. But – doesn't look like that's going to be the case, but you know, it could be too. Also, Chris, people just aren't aware of the fact that Jeff's under a TNA deal and that Ray's under a Lucha Underground deal. So I'm not saying that people need to know this stuff and they, you know, it's their fault, but you know, consider the source when you see these stories, you know, getting printed out there.
Yeah, I agree with you. You know, the first, as you were talking and as I was, you know, raising this topic up, I thought about the age-old telephone game. You know, there's a string of people in one line, and you tell the first person one thing, and by the time you get to the back of the line, it's something totally different than what was told in the front of the line. And a lot of times that's how reports travel, you know, between websites, wrestling platforms. And, you know, I wrote for a very popular, one of the most popular wrestling websites for 2 years, and I broke news and did reports. So, and I know I've took some heat as far as a source telling me something that wasn't true, and I've been praised for breaking something that I knew firsthand. So, you know, it's just one of those things, like you said, SEO rankings is, you know, we're going to break this news, you know, and then people are going to, you know, grab that and put it on their site so they can get some buzz. And it just travels just like a telephone game. And it's not, you know, it doesn't end up what was originally reported. And so, you know, at the end of the day, you know, it's Jeff Hardy, like you said, Jeff Hardy and Rey Mysterio are two of the least, you know, possible options as far as coming back to the WWE based on their commitments. And like you said, based on just their, you know, especially Mysterio's physical health, it just, you know, he's in his 40s now and, you know, both of his knees are done and it's just, he's just really physically incapable to endure the schedule that the WWE presents. So, you know, I don't really see too much going on with that. Bret Hart shoots on Triple H about having a higher rating than him on WWE 2K17. Now, Adam, would you call this petty, bitter, or both, or neither?
I just think Bret's a grumpy old man right now, and I do like Bret Hart, and I've met Bret many times, and it's weird because when you meet him, he's the polar opposite of this like grumpy Bret Hart that we're hearing from a lot on the internet lately. Like he's one of the nicest wrestlers I've ever met. Obviously a very quiet guy, but when he opens up to you, and you sit down and you get an opportunity to talk, you know, about wrestling or whatever, he's a really nice guy. But lately, and I think, I don't know if it's the fact that this is coming, I believe this came from a podcast that he has now.
Right.
And I don't know, and that's kind of the new thing now. If you're a wrestler, you get a podcast. And yeah. I don't know if that's playing into the fact that he knows if he says something that it's going to create some buzz. And if that's kind of what he's trying to do, I get it. But I think after a while, people are going to like kind of catch on and they're going to kind of figure it out. And he's someone that still has – I don't know if I want to use the word grudge, but definitely probably has some issues still with Triple H from what happened in 1997. And it seems like he's moved on from it with Shawn Michaels, but I don't know if that's been the case with Triple H. Maybe he's been very critical of Triple H. He was critical of the match Triple H had a couple of years ago with Brock Lesnar, where he did that famous, you know, 4 out of 10 thing. Mm-hmm. And, It's really weird. Like it's getting to the point now where it's just like, well, what else does Bret Hart not like, you know? And it's just becoming almost like a parody of itself. And I, you know, I definitely value his opinion. And you know, he went after, I'm sure you saw when he went after Seth Rollins for breaking John Cena's nose and how he said that was irresponsible because Bret always took a lot of pride in the fact that he never hurt anybody, which, you know, is commendable, but you know, this is a little, you can't compare, you know, the era that Bret wrestled in when people didn't have HD cameras where you could see everything. I mean, that was one of the biggest pros and cons of when WWE went HD a couple of years ago. Well, it's been more than a couple of years ago now. It's been almost going on, you know, 8-9 years now. But I remember the first time watching a WWE show in HD and thinking like, wow, these guys are going to have to work so snug now because you can just see things so much more detailed and you can hear things a lot better. Not to say that, you know, Seth was doing all he could to try to break John's nose, but, you know, Bret was pretty critical of it and Seth took offense to it and kind of disappointed him. But I think that's kind of what Bret's in that situation now where he's obviously been retired for a long time from wrestling and he gets to sit back and kind of give his thoughts. And I don't know. I think maybe part of it is trying to create some buzz for his podcast. And a lot of guys, Taz was notorious for doing that in the early days of his podcast where he would just say the dumbest stuff that made no sense. but people would pick it up. We were just talking about the SEO wrestling websites. Those sites would pick it up. They would print his words, and then it would start trending on Twitter, or it would at least get people talking on Twitter. And then there you go.
Yeah.
What better way to have a show?
This podcast now.
Exactly. And it sounds like Taz is his show is really successful, and that's really cool. And it's just some of these dudes, and I'm not saying Taz intention, because I don't think he does this on a regular occurrence, but Bret Hart seems to be doing that, where you just kind of like just say something. So it's becoming a parody now of, you know, what else is Bret going to get angry at next? And who cares about a video game? I mean, it's a little silly if you think about it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You're being modest by saying little. I think it's very silly. I think you make some very fair points. I mean, as far as just it just seems like there's still a disdain, you know, nearly 20 years later of Bret toward Triple H, because there's been many. I've watched dozens and hundreds, really, of hours of YouTube. I work out every morning, and usually watching wrestling history something on YouTube is usually my half hour cardio startup for my morning at the gym, just to refresh myself, you know, as a wrestling historian, so to speak, and just to give myself more material for my podcast. And it's really beneficial. And one day I spent some time just searching Bret Hart's, you know, bitterness towards people, and specifically Triple H, and man, just all the interviews that Bret Hart had, there was some video that was just, I mean, it lasted for a while. It was just a string of interviews that Bret Hart had that he would talk about Triple H just so awfully. And I was just like, man, Triple H is never known as being the best wrestler in the world, but like, give the guy, you know, some slack. You know, he's not that bad. I mean, I don't think he's bad at all, actually. I think he's a quite solid performer, and especially from a ring psychology standpoint. But, you know, it's interesting. Like I said, I mean, and like you were saying as well, I think there's still some disdain there, and that he probably hasn't shaken off totally, as opposed to Michaels. All right, real quick, Moose, former interviewee of the Pancakes and Power Slam show, he confirmed his departure from ROH, and right now he's in possible talks with TNA, reportedly. Where do you think Moose goes? I mean, there was some – he was backstage at an NXT show, but there were reportedly some – you know, there's some stalling going on, because from an image standpoint – you know, there's some talks as far as the domestic history, and there's a bunch of different talks going around as far as why the WWE stalling, but that has reportedly allowed him to become a pretty hot commodity in TNA. Do you see any benefit in that as far as the TNA run?
Well, I can answer your question about where he's going. He showed up on Impact tonight. They did do a live tape edition of Impact, so it aired on a little bit of a delay on Pop TV. But he did show up in the main event between Lashley and Eddie Edwards. So he's definitely with TNA now. And at one point, I know there was an interest in him from the WWE, but apparently they backed off when they discovered a domestic issue that he had back in 2009 when he was in the NFL. He actually was suspended from the NFL as a result of that. So I think there was, a little apprehension there from the WWE. They're definitely doing more thorough background checks than they ever used to in the history of the company, especially with, what just went down with Jerry Lawler. They kind of wanted, and Adam Rose recently too. So probably don't want to pick up a guy that, has that in his history. You know, maybe that cools off after a while, but he definitely gained a lot of popularity over the last 2 years in Ring of Honor. And, I'm sure there was probably some of the, you know, the Ring of Honor wrestling snobs, and I like Ring of Honor, but some of the fans can be pretty obnoxious, and I'm sure that they had their apprehensions about a former football player deciding to become a wrestler. So, but I've always been very impressed with what I've seen from him. And whether or not it's going to be successful or not, I don't know, but you know, there's definitely, I mean, if you look at the TNA roster right now, and there's a lot of new names on there, and it looks like they're going to have him do something with Lashley. They had him confront Lashley at the end of the show tonight on Pop TV. So, you know, I think it's a good move by TNA to get a guy like him, because clearly the WWE had interest, so it's kind of a nice coup for them to be able to pick somebody up. Obviously, they don't care about the background issues, because they're not publicly traded, and I don't think they have to answer to too many things like that. But I think it's a good move, and you know, he's going to be making some pretty decent money in TNA, despite some of the potential financial issues the company's experiencing at the moment. I think there might be a possible new investor stepping up here. There's been a lot of talks about that in recent weeks, but it's a good move for him, because you can only kind of do so much in Ring of Honor is a great starting off point. So kudos to him kind of getting to start there, and obviously, you know, working the indies and stuff, but I think it'll be, you know, a pretty good move for him. I mean, it's not going to take him to, you know, gigantic heights in the wrestling industry, because you can kind of only go so far in TNA as well, but it's, you know, if you can make the money, make the money.
Yeah, and here's the thing. I like Moose a lot. He's actually one of my top five right now, and I just love his agility for his size. It's incredibly impressive. I mean, he bills himself as having the world's best drop kick. So I think that's great. Impact Wrestling's on my DVR. There's sometimes I catch it before the show, there's sometimes I don't, but now I have a reason to go and watch on my DVR, maybe even after the show. So let's spend a couple minutes before we get to the flavor of the week. A couple minutes. Let's just kind of merge the last headline with the Raw review, and let's talk about the Matt Hardy versus Jeff Hardy final deletion match in comparison to the New Day versus Wyatt match at the Compound. Now, of course, it just seems like I don't think it was, you know, coincidence that the same thing was, you know, within both matches. Now, you know, who do you think ripped off of who? Do you think someone ripped it off, period? And which one do you think was a better presentation?
Well, I mean, it's pretty well known that the Matt Hardy, Jeff Hardy thing made the rounds among people in WWE. Like when the first segment started airing, the really strange ones that people were making fun of, I know for a fact people were watching it in the WWE and laughing and kind of trying to figure out like what is this, like what are they trying to do. So I'm sure there's people that were keeping an eye on what was going on between Matt and Jeff Hardy. The Matt and Jeff Hardy thing though was very over the top, and I didn't find the Wyatt Family New Day thing to be that over the top. I mean,
I agree.
It was from a visual standpoint, it was dark with the lights kind of illuminating. So of course it had the same kind of vibe as the final deletion match. But like in the Matt Hardy Jeff Hardy thing, I mean they're launching fireworks at each other, and there's drones and, you know, lawnmowers and dilapidated boats and yeah, Senior Benjamin, and like it's just so over the top. And I watched it and I was laughing and I was smiling, and I appreciated what those guys were trying to do. They were trying to create something that was completely different, incredibly strange, but entertaining all at the same time. And the Wyatt Family New Day stuff, it had the same like visual look, but it wasn't anything like that. I think the thing is, and I think maybe you'll agree with this too, and I've experienced this since TNA has started, is that there's always been this undying need with TNA fans to accuse the WWE of ripping them off or borrowing something. Or I remember many years ago when TNA started Impact shows with like a recap with a narration, and then it started happening like that on Raw. And there was just this like, oh, they're – and maybe they did, maybe they didn't. But I try not to get caught up in that stuff, because I find people that fixate on that stuff are really strange to begin with.
Yeah.
And they're almost taking wrestling a little too seriously. And they kind of need to take a breath, and they, you know, maybe they need a hug, or they need to go outside and exercise or something, because who cares? At the end of the day, it's really at the end of the day, it's what was entertaining. And I'm still not really truly blown away by the New Day, you know, Wyatt Family stuff. I think there could be something there. It looks like they might be breaking up the New Day heading into the draft. So we'll see maybe where that goes. But I thought that, you know, having watched what went down on Raw and having watched the final deletion thing, I thought it was visually a little, yeah. I mean, like the illumination and stuff, but it wasn't. To me, they felt like very different things.
Yeah. I don't know what I feel. We only got a couple minutes. I don't know how I feel about the final deletion match yet. I keep saying on my show that I appreciate the theatrics that has came with this Brother Nero and Broken Matt angle. I appreciate it, but I don't know. I still don't know. I still haven't grabbed the grade yet as far as the final deletion. I do like the compound match just because I think it led. It was more of a cliffhanger, and the final deletion was more of a culmination of an already overbooked Matt Hardy versus Jeff Hardy feud. So, all right, real quick, let's get to the flavor of the week. We only have about a good minute left, so we'll condense this immensely.
It is now time for the flavor of the week.
All right, so real quick, Adam, this is what we'll do. Your favorite match between 88 and 93, the one that sticks out the most?
Probably 92, which I'm going to be the sucker with the Wembley Stadium, Bret Hart, yeah. British Bulldog match. But I just remember watching that as a kid and just the emotion and the crowd shots of the wife. And it was just, you know, that huge crowd was awesome. So, and it was cool to see an Intercontinental title match main event.
Yeah, I agree with you. That one was awesome. And just for the historic value, speaking of Intercontinental title, I think 90 with Texas Tornado and Mr. Perfect for the Intercontinental Championship was amazing, too, because I was always a Kerry Von Erich fan as a kid, watching World Class and just seeing him have that opportunity in the WWE was absolutely incredible to me. So, all right, Adam, let us know where we can find you if we've been hiding under a rock.
WrestleView.com will be the main place to find me. We actually have a new website design. That's why I wasn't here last week. I apologize for having to reschedule on you, but we launched a new website design, so we're happy about that. You can follow us on Twitter at WrestleView, and you can find me on Twitter at Adam WrestleView as well.
Absolutely, and the site looks great. I was just looking at it today, so thank you, Adam.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Oh, man. Yeah, absolutely. It looks great. Thank you, Adam. It's been a pleasure, and I'm sure we'll hear from you back on the show soon.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on, Chris. I appreciate it.
All right. Thank you. All right, ladies and gentlemen, fantastic show from Ted DiBiase Jr. and also Adam Martin from WrestleView.com. And ladies and gentlemen, that is 224 episodes wrapping up. Fantastic night as always. Follow us at Crave Wrestling on Twitter. Like the Crave Wrestling Facebook page on Crave Wrestling. And stay tuned to the Crave Wrestling Facebook, the Raw reviews that's been having some great interaction. So until next week, thank you so much for listening to the show. God bless you. Enjoy your week of wrestling. And Chris Featherstone, Crave Wrestling, signing off.